Good morning, everybody. Boker Tov. It's good to see everybody here. Thank you for coming. A few housekeeping matters as we begin the shiur. First of all, apologies again. I'm a little bit congested again, but I think we'll be fine. Bezrat Hashem to get through today's shiur. Next week will be my last away week till the summer. Hopefully I'll be able to go straight through. I'll be in America next Wednesday. So we won't be having a shiur next Wednesday, but at least not with me. There probably will be something here. You can ask the OU that. But from the week after that, Bezrat Hashem, I don't see any reason going forward why we can't continue. Today's shiur is sponsored, and we encourage people, if they wish to sponsor, to come forward and do so. It's sponsored in loving memory of Simcha Bat Shaul. Please God, the shiur should be an Ilu Neshama for her, Simcha Bat Shaul, and we should learn some good Torah, Le'ilu Nishmata. Now, it's still Hanukkah, for a few more hours, but we talked at length last week about a very Hanukkah-related issue. I'd like to move forward from Hanukkah into a series on something we've never talked about in this forum, which is halachic and hashkafic relevant issues on Tumah and Tahara questions. Now, Tumah and Tahara, which I won't translate yet, but Tumah and Tahara is something that we're not really very familiar with today. And of course, it is a Hanukkah theme. We say on Hanukkah, in Al HaNisim, that one of the victories that we celebrate on Hanukkah, if you look in source number one just for a second, Masarta Giburim V'Yad Chalashim, those who were strong were delivered into the hands of those who were relatively weaker, V'Rabim V'Yad Ma'atim, and those who were many into the hands of the few, U'Tameim V'Yad Tzahorim, and those who were Tamei, and we'll have to define and see what that means, into the hands of those who were Tahor, Verashaim, Biyad, Tzadikim. And therefore, I'd like to spend a few weeks talking today and then in 2 weeks from then on some interesting modern-day hashkafic and halachic relevant questions on Tumah and Tahara. As a little bit of a preview, somebody asked me today why I don't always announce the subject of the shiur the week before the shiur. I'll be quite honest with you, I don't always know the subject of the shiur the week before the shiur, but sometimes I do. Please God, what I'd like to talk about when I come back in a couple of weeks' time is, if you remember, there was a period of time when the flights out of Ben-Gurion were going over Cholon Cemetery, and there were other similar related issues, and we had a number of Kohanim who were wrapping themselves up in plastic bags. Okay, do you remember that? Remember that whole story? And see how that works. So what I'd like to look at in 2 weeks' time, which is actually, it's a fascinating, fascinating question, is this whole issue of Kohanim on airplanes, with bodies under the planes, which is very frequent on Elal flights, and flying over cemeteries, etc., and how we deal with this question, and it will really expose us to a whole area of Torah that we don't often get a chance to look at. So that's by way of a preview. We've got in 2 weeks from now, we'll start with that. But today I'd like to look at a self-contained separate issue, which is a Tumah and Tahara issue, which is the question of dipping food into liquids. Now, you may not know what I'm talking about yet in terms of dipping food, which is, makes it all the more important that we give this shiur so that we know what's going on. Let's deal with that topic in a few minutes. I think they might have the heating on, actually, in which case they could turn it off because it's really not cold. But fine. So let's have a look at this issue of dipping food into liquid. We'll start with a little bit of an introduction to Tumah and Tahara. What are Tumah and Tahara? Well, whatever they are, they're pretty important because 1,003 out of the 4,192 Mishnayot, meaning we have in the Mishnah 4,192 Mishnayot, 1,000 plus of them relate to Tumah and Tahara. That's nearly a quarter of the entire corpus of the oral law of Torah Shabbat Peh relates to Tumah and Tahara, which is something which we don't really connect with today. Often translated completely inappropriately, not inappropriately, but inadequately, as purity and impurity, it's hard to use those words, so I'm not going to use them. I'm just going to call it Tumah and Tahara. Tahara is some kind of positive purity, and Tumah is some kind of lack of that. They may be connected with the word Atum. In modern Hebrew, there's a word Atum. It's also not just in modern Hebrew, which means closed, blocked, some kind of blockage that you, like a cheder atum, in modern Hebrew we have a cheder atum, which is a sealed room. It's some kind of blockage that is unable to connect with more Kodesh ideas. They do not relate to physical cleanliness, that's for sure. It's nothing to do with clean and unclean in a physical sense. Perhaps the most helpful definition is that given by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. If you look in number 2 and 3, Rav Aaron picks up on a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk in Tehillim says, Yirat Hashem Tahora. Fear of God is Tahora, number 2. Omedet La'ad. And it lasts forever. It goes on forever. So Rav Aaron picks up on this as follows. Would you like another one? There's another one here. Rav Aaron picks up on this as follows, and he says the following, number 3. What is purity? The verse, fear of God is pure, it is everlasting, gives us a clue as to the real meaning of tahara. Purity is that which is permanent. Purity is to be equated with permanent continuity and everlastingness. Impurity, on the other hand, is to be equated with deterioration, decomposition, and temporality. The corpse of a dead person is tamei, impure, because it represents the decomposition and deterioration of heretofore noble existence. And nevela, the carcass of an animal, is impure because it represents deterioration of a former animal existence. And therefore, tumah seems to very often be connected with some kind of a breakdown, a decomposition, and some kind of a death association. And it's not that difficult to see how the different kinds of tumah which the Torah presents are connected in different ways with death. I brought you a list here. Some of them are very obvious. Obviously, a dead human being. There's nothing more connected with death in our eyes than that. A dead animal, as Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron just said in the Vela, is also a source of tumah. A mitzorah, a person that has tsara'at, which is also difficult to define. It's probably not leprosy, but some kind of a wasting disease when we look at them and their body, nebach, is kind of decomposing or wasting away before us. That's also a kind of death source of tumah. Nida, obviously, a menstrual cycle, which is the lack of a potential life, a pregnancy that could have been that month that will not be. That's a kind of loss of potential life. Keri, similarly, the same idea. Very interesting. Accompaniment to our shir. Okay. Zav and Zava are individuals who have issues with their reproductive systems that are not working properly. Yoledet is perhaps the most challenging. Why is a woman who gives birth tamei? And I even brought you a reference to a full article on that at the bottom, which I'm not going to go into now, but that's an interesting question. What is the source of tumah of a woman who has just given birth? There's nothing death-related in that. Unless, of course, you say that what she had inside her was a beating, alive human being, a heartbeat inside her that she no longer has inside her, and as far as she's concerned, there was life within her, which is no longer within her. Baruch Hashem, it's now outside her and is growing and independent. But that loss of inner life, maybe, is a source of that halal, that vacuum, if you like, that leaves within her, maybe, in a sense, the source of the tumah. That might even explain, although not necessarily, why it is that a woman is tamei if she gives birth to a male child for 7 days and for a female child for 14 days. Why would the tumah be more, why would the loss of life be more significant to give birth to a girl? And I saw once, I don't remember where I saw this, but there is a beautiful idea I read once that when a woman is carrying a male child, so she's carrying her child. And when that child is born, then that child is no longer within her. When a woman is carrying a female child, she's also carrying her grandchildren. Because all of the ova, all of the eggs that one day will become her grandchildren are contained already within the ovaries of the fetus that she, the female fetus that she's carrying inside her, and therefore there are even two generations inside her which are no longer there once the child is born. Whether that's the reason or whether that's not the reason, I don't know, but it's a nice idea that I once saw. Now, leaving aside the definition of tumah and tahara, how does it apply to our lives? So go over to page 2, please. So, in the temple times, tumah and tahara was extremely applicable for many people, especially those that lived in Yerushalayim. Entry to and preparations for going into Har HaBayit and the Beit HaMikdash, and if you remember, we had a whole shiur on going onto Har HaBayit. We're not going to talk about that now. Entry into walled cities at a time when a Metzora was not allowed to live there. Physical contact with other people who wish to live a life of Tahara, if you look in the Mishnayot, and if you look in the Halachot, and Tumah and Tahara, it was very much part of their life. Meaning, we think of Kashrus, you know, we have one set for Milchiks, and one set for Fleishiks, and maybe a little bit of Parav, if you're daring enough to have some Parav in the house. Okay, and then on Pesach we have another set, etc. Back in the day when people kept Tumah and Tahara on a more day-to-day basis, they also had a set for Truma, if they were Kohanim, and another set for Kodshim. The people who came in the house, they weren't able to sit on their chairs unless they knew if they were Tahor. The Mishnah says there were certain people that when a workman would come to your house, you would ask them, hang on a minute, just stand by the door, I'm going to bring you a set of clothes to change into because I don't want you coming in the house with clothes which are not tahor, because you'll mess up my whole house. And taking things to the mikveh was a serious business. It's not just pots and pans, but it's also tables and chairs. They also have to be tahor for people. Nothing more annoying, no doubt, than if you've just got your table, your dining room set back from the mikveh, that some unfortunate soul sits down on your chairs and table or whatever and re-tummies up your chairs and table. Who's going to take them back to the mikveh now? Are you going to do that, or am I going to have to do that? Obviously, this was an issue, which is one of the reasons why we've discovered from archaeology that when we dig up the homes of the Kohanim that lived in the base, in the old city, in the area near the Western Wall, there in the Jewish quarter, underneath Yeshivat HaKotel, you know, the burnt house, etc., many of their household furnishings were made of stone, because stone was not Makabel Tumah, and stone not like sort of like in the Flintstones stone, but like beautiful stone and granite and polished stone, etc., because that would not be Makabel Tumah. Therefore, this was a real issue to people in many parts of their lives. Obviously, many people who lived outside Jerusalem just did not live a life of Tahara, and they didn't need to. It didn't stop them from doing anything, but many people did. But today, what is left of that? What do we have of Tumah and Tahara? So I brought you a few examples in B2 on number 2, there, page number 2. Constructing a mikveh, we still have mikveh, and of course we still have issues of nidah. Nidah, the truth is, in modern day times, is not so much a Tumah and Tahara issue as an issa v'hesa issue between the husband and wife. It really finds its application as to whether the husband and wife can have any kind of physical contact with each other, but it still, at its roots, is based in the ideas of Tumah and Tahara, and the way that the halachas of nidah work still work in that way. Kohanim, which we're going to talk about next time, and proximity to dead bodies, etc. Netilat yadayim for food which are dipped and wet, we'll talk about that today. Entry onto Harabayit, we already mentioned that in previous shirim. And many of the halachas of Netilat yadayim, the halachas of schach on a sukkah, also connect in some ways to Tumah and Tahara. But not many is the answer, not many issues. And the truth is, it must have made people extremely aware. If you think about it, we're already very highly conscious halachically of what's going on. Meaning normal people, as far as I'm aware, when they come down to breakfast, they sit down, they pour a bowl of cornflakes and milk, and they sit and they eat it. Jewish people don't do that. We pour a bowl of cornflakes and milk, and then we look at it and we say, well, what brocha do I make on the cornflakes and milk? Are the cornflakes the ikka, in which case maybe a berei be'adoma? Or is the milk the ikka, in which case the shishahakol? Are the cornflakes Kellogg's, in which case the hadoma? Or are they Telmer, in which case the shahakol? Meaning, life for us is very conscious, and that's a very important thing, that we don't just go on autopilot. Every single step of our lives, we're thinking in halachic terms. Read Halachic Man by Rav Soloveitchik. He talks about that, obviously, in great detail. If you live the life of Tumah and Tahara, that would be even more so the case. Am I going to sit on this chair? Who has sat on that chair before? Will it make me tummy? Will it not make me tummy? How does that work? You can imagine life was very much lived in that very conscious sense when people were conscious of Tumah and Tahara. But for us today, it's much less relevant. What I want to talk to you about today is a topic which is so unknown that many people in this room may not be familiar with it at all. I looked at your faces when I raised the issue before, some of you looking sort of a little bit lost there, but which is on the books, which is in the Shulchan Aruch, which is the issue which is as follows. When you dip foods, any foods, into liquid, are you obligated first to do Netilas Yadayim before you eat those foods? And I'm not talking about bread, I'm talking about many other examples which we'll give soon. Is there an obligation of Netilas Yadayim? And let's see what I'm talking about right now. Look in source number 4, please, in number 2. Page number 2, source number 4. The Gemara in Pesachim raises as a Dover Poshet, he quotes the Halacha, Amar Rebbe Elazar, Amar Rebbe Yoshaya, Kol she tibula b'mashke, anything which you dip in liquid, Sarich netilat yadai. Any food you dip in liquid has to first be preceded by a proper netilas yadai. Now, why is the Gemara in Pesachim dealing with that? Because he's talking about Seder night. And Seder night is the one night of the year when this becomes most relevant to us, because we, of course, dip not just once, but twice. We dip, first of all, the karpas into the salt water, and we do netilas yadayim before that. And later on, we also dip the maror into the haroses. And here the Gemara is actually talking about dipping the maror into the haroses, and saying before you're dipping your lettuce or whatever it is into the haroses, does that require netilas yadayim before or not? And the Gemara gives us a basic idea that it does require netilas yadayim. The question is, why would this be? Why would I need to go and wash my hands with a kli in the normal way that I would normally wash for bread if I'm just dipping apple in honey or celery in salt water? Why would I need to do this? And here we need to have a brief introduction to how Tumah and Tahara works on a halachic level. There are many, many details to Tumah and Tahara, and I'm not getting into them now, but there are basically three levels. The primary source of Tumah is something called an Av HaTumah. Av obviously means a father, like we see an Av Malocha on Shabbat. An Av HaTumah is a primary source of Tumah, and there are many of those. A dead body, which is maybe even higher than an Av HaTumah, it's even a grandfather of Tumah. A person who's been in contact with a dead body, a Matsora, a Nida, a Zav, a Zava, a Yoledit, all of these things, all of these people, are a primary source of Tumah. And that if they come into contact with you, or with Kalim, like the Shtender, or with foods, they will make them Tameh. They are a very potent source of Tumah. That's the first level. The second level is what's called a Rishon L'Tumah, which is a primary recipient of Tumah. If I bring my, I don't know, a metal vessel of some kind, a metal plate, and a person who is Tameh Mate, who has been in contact with a dead body, but is no longer in contact with a dead body, but has not become Tahor, touches my metal plate, they make my metal plate Tameh as well, but not as an Av HaTumah, but as one stage down from that, which is a Rishon L'Tumah. If I then put food onto my metal plate, okay, that food will pick up a lower level, which is a Sheni L'Tumah, okay? So they are basically three levels. An Av HaTumah, which is a source, a Rishon L'Tumah, which is a primary recipient, and a Sheni L'Tumah, which only applies to food, which is a secondary recipient. A kli cannot make another kli normally. Tameh doesn't go on forever. It eventually runs out with a Sheni L'Tumah. There are other levels, but they are all we need to know for now. So, why would dipping food into liquid make you liable for Tinas Yadayim? So, the Rashbam explains in number 5, based on what we've seen here with an Av, an Rishon, and a Sheni. Have a look in number 5, please. Kol shetipul b'mashkim. Anything which is dipped in liquids. Kagan, such as yerek, a vegetable, which of course is our case here on Seder night. Bekutach or bechomet. Kutach is some kind of a spice which is vinegar, wine vinegar based, or bechomet or with vinegar itself. Tarik v'tilat yadayim mishum mashke. You need to first wash before you dip your food into these liquids because they are liquid. Shehayadayim shniyot. We'll talk about that right now. Hands automatically have a level of Tumah, even if you don't know what's happened to them, of a secondary level of Tumah, Shniot. V'kol ha-posel et ha-Tumah, and anything like a Sheni L'Tumah, which would invalidate Tumah. Tumah is the special level food which the Kohenim would eat, which is a higher level of Kedusha. Anything which invalidates Tumah, Metameh Mashkem, will make liquids Tameh Liyot Tchila, to be on a level of a Rishon L'Tumah. Let me explain this. There are a few things going on here. Normally speaking, when something touches another thing, the level of Tumah always goes down. It goes from Av, which is the highest, to Rishon, which is the next one, to Sheni, which is the next one down. In the case of liquids, the rabbis said no. We are going to be stricter on a rabbinic level and say that when you touch liquids, actually the level of Tumah will go up for reasons that we'll mention and make clear in a couple of minutes. How does this work? Chazal gave a general designation of hands as being Sheni. Why are hands a Sheni L'Tumah? What's wrong with my hands? Meaning on a Torah level, a person is either completely Tahor or completely Tameh. And the only way you can get out of being Tameh is to go to a mikveh. You can't dip your hands in something. That won't work. Chazal created a new concept, which is Tumat Yadayim. Which is, they said, look, hands are very busy. Askaniot heim. They're all over the place. Who knows where your hands have been? Unless you, you know, walk out of the house in the morning wearing latex gloves, which is one option, by the way, and then your hands are nice and clean the whole day halakhically. You don't know what your hands have been scratching, where they've been touching, what they've been doing. You couldn't give me a list of places your hands have been since 7 o'clock this morning. So Chazal say, look, we're going to make a general rabbinic din that hands are sheni l'tuma, which is a lower level of tuma. So when they touch truma, which is obviously a Kaddish food, they will invalidate it. When they touch chulin, regular food, they will not invalidate it because they're not a strong enough level of tuma. But for truma, they are a problem. Okay, so I won't touch truma. I'm not a Kohen. I'm not going near any tuma. That's fine. Let my hands be a sheni l'tuma. They won't cause a problem. Aha, say Chazal. But they will. Because if they touch liquids, because there are liquids out there which are an av hatuma, certain liquids like bodily fluids of a zava and a zava, I'm not getting into this or I'll put you off your lunch, okay? Okay? But since there are liquids out there which are very, very tamei, Chazal were very nervous about liquids and they said the following. When you, with your second degree tuma hands, touch a liquid, you will actually make that liquid more tamei. You will make it into a rishon l'tumah. Okay, that's a problem. Why is that a problem? Because now when that liquid, which is rishon l'tumah, touches the food, even though regular chulin does not pick up tumah from a sheni, it does pick up tumah from a rishon. And therefore, what you've basically done, say Chazal, is as follows. Since your hands are sheni, you've made the liquid into a rishon, which has upgraded the level of tumah, and that liquid will now make your food into a sheni again, and then you're eating tameh food. Oi, that's a problem. Is it a big problem? Not necessarily, because I don't have to eat food which is tahor, unless, of course, I'm a Kohen and I'm going to the Beit HaMikdash, etc. But Chazal say, look, people want to live on a level of tara. Therefore, whenever you eat food dipped in liquid, we want you to wash your hands. Just like we'll see in a minute, just like you wash for bread, we'll talk about bread in a minute, so too you have to wash your hands when you eat food which is dipped in a liquid. Otherwise, you will end up eating food which is tamei, which is on a level of a sheni l'tumah. Whether you're bothered about that or not, Chazal appears to say that is a problem. Go over to page number 3, and you'll see how the Rambam brings this in halacha, even bizman hazeh. Look what the Rambam says. The Rambam picks up on this halacha, and he says the following. Kol ha'ochel ha'pat. First of all, he talks about bread. If you eat bread, shemabarachan alav hamotzi, which you know is hamotzi, because as you know, there are other kinds of pat from the bread family which are not hamotzi, like donuts, if anyone's ever eaten donuts here, okay? They are mazonot. Although there is a question about donuts, whether they are really hamotzi or mazonot, that's not for now. It's too late in Chanukah to worry about that right now. So if you eat bread which is hamotzi, tzarich netilat yadayim. Tchila, you first have to wash your hands, v'sof, and you have to wash your hands at the end, which is what we call mayim achronim, which we're not getting into now. V'af al pi shehi pat chulin, says the Rambam, even though it's chulin, meaning it's not truma, even though the bread that we eat today is on a very sort of low level of kedusha in that sense. It's not the trum of the kohenim. Nevertheless, you have to wash your hands. V'afal pi she'ein yadav meluch lachot. Even though you don't know if your hands are dirty or not, it doesn't matter. V'ein yodeh lehen tumah. You don't think that they're tameh. You believe your hands to be tahor. It doesn't matter. Lo yochal, you must not eat. Ad she'yitol shtei yadav. You must first have to wash both of your hands. And this everyone in the room knows. Before you eat bread, you take a kli, you fill it with water, you wash this hand twice, or maybe three times, depending, or maybe once, depending on your minhag. I'm not getting into that now. Once this time, or twice this one, and twice this one. Fine. By the way, washing for bread should never be done like this. Okay? That is a mistake in halacha. That is how you wash in the morning, when you wash for nagelvasser, as we call it. But that is not the way to wash for netilas yadayim, and actually is counterproductive, because you end up re-tallying your hands as you're going from one to the other. Therefore, you shouldn't wash like that. You should either wash once, or twice, or three times, depending on what you do, on one hand, and then on the other. Fine. Everybody knows that you wash for bread, even though the bread is not truma. What's he talking about? Because back in the day when the Kohenim were eating truma on a level of tahara, one of the most standard ways in which they ate their grain truma was as bread. If you gave your grain to a Kohen, they didn't eat granola in those days, I suppose. They ate bread, okay? Granola is a modern thing. So they ate bread, so the bread was truma, so the Kohenim had to wash for truma. They absolutely had to, because their hands were sheni l'tuma, and sheni l'tuma will infect, quote-unquote, the truma. So why is everybody else washing? Why am I washing? I'm not a Kohen, I don't eat truma. So Chazal at the time said, and this is why, at least one of the reasons why we wash hands today for bread. Because the Kohanim have to wash for Truma, so you and I, even if we're not Kohanim, also have to wash, even if the bread is not Truma. Why? So that there will remain a consciousness of this halacha within the halachic system, and one day when we get the Beis HaMikdash back and we're able to eat Truma properly and Kohanim can eat their Truma, everyone will know that you have to wash for bread. It's an amazing thing. Next Shabbos, or whenever you wash next for bread and you wash your hands, you're making a statement, which is, Chazal told me to do this so that once we get Tuma and Tahara back again, the Kohanim will be careful to wash for their Truma. It's a very positive statement that we'll get a Beis HaMikdash b'Mehera v'Yameinu every time you wash your hands. So, said the Rambam, no controversy there, you have to wash for bread. Fine. Then he says at the end of number 6, V'chein, in the same way, kol davar shetibuli b'mashkim, anytime you dip anything in liquids, tzarich netilat shadayim tchila. You have to wash for that as well. It's the same halacha. Just like you wash for bread, so too you have to wash for things which are dipped in liquids. Do you have to make a brocha al netilat shadayim? He doesn't say not. He says, just like you wash for bread, so too you have to wash for things dipped in liquid. And it's assuming that you would make a brocha as well. And this indeed is the position of many Rishonim, of Rashi, of the Rambam, as we saw, of Rabbeinu Yonah, of the Rosh, that even Bizman Azeh, just like Chazal made a takana that applies to bread, even today when we have no Truma, and we have no Tuma and Tara, so too Chazal made a takana that applies to liquids, even though we have no Truma, and we have no Tuma and Tara today either. So that's one position in the Rishonim. Tosfos take a different view. Look at number 7. Look at number 7. Tosfos immediately on the Gemara come in and say, we don't agree. He explains first the position of those who do require it. As we've said, anything that invalidates Truma, like hands which are sheni l'tumah, will then make liquids a rishon l'tumah. And that would make your vegetables or fruit or whatever you're dipping in liquids just like bread. Nama is bread. But tzarich little, and you'd have to wash kamoi banama, just like you have to wash for bread, which is exactly what the Rambam said. The Ein Nira, says Tosfos, I do not agree. Ein Nira lefarish kein. The Im kein, if that were the case, says Tosfos, ki parich, why does the Gemara then ask the question immediately afterwards, lameli netilat shadayim halon naga? Why do I need netilat shadayim if I'm careful not to touch? Meaning, I don't know how you dip your maror in your charoses, or how liquidy your charoses is. In my experience, most people just want to sit and eat the charoses and forget about the maror completely, which of course is a different question. But the Gemara gets into a very interesting argument there about what happens if someone's very dainty and very careful and they can dip their maror or dip their carpus very carefully and not touch the liquid. Can they get away with that and not have to wash? Says Tosfos, what are you talking about? If you eat bread, if it's really the same as bread, if you're eating bread, but you don't touch the bread, do you still have to wash your hands? I'm asking you a question. If somebody feeds you the bread, who has to wash their hands? Them, who are touching the bread, or you, who have your hands tied behind your back, and not, you've just got your mouth open. Who has to wash their hands? The one who's eating has to wash their hands. Says Tosfos, why do I care whether the person is touching the carpet, the liquid or not? Afilu iloi naga. It's okay. Musical accompaniment's good. Okay. Iloi naga. Even if they didn't touch the liquid, came into sof achil mashka, since they're at the end of the day eating, mashka amatubal, the things which are dipped in liquid, loi garame oichel machmas ma'achel. Why is it different from eating bread when if you're being fed the bread, you still have to wash the boy netilat shadayim? You still need to do the netilat shadayim. That's the halacha. If somebody is feeding you bread, and they're touching the bread, and you're eating the bread, you have to wash. They don't have to wash. They're not eating. You're eating. So says Tosfos, if already the Gemara is asking questions like, maybe you cannot touch the liquid, it's obviously not the same as bread. It's not the same as bread. And he explains why. Venera, third line of Tosfos. The netila dahacha, the washing that we're talking about here for liquids, loy mishum kedusha v'nekiyah, is not like the washing for bread, kamoi banama, which is because of kedusha, we'll see in a minute. It's because we don't want to make the mashkim, lo yitamei mashkim, they won't make the mashkim tamei, the water, the liquid tamei, liot chila. Meaning, says Tosfos, this washing for dipping is a very different kind of washing. It's only because of Tuma and Tara. Because of this, nira de ein levarech al oitzen atila. Don't make a brocha natila shadaim on that washing. Koshikain anan, all the more so for us, she'ein anu nitharim mitumas atzmeinu. We are not worried today about tumas atzmeinu. We're all tameh. Every single person in this room, almost for sure, is tameh. Every time you walked into a hospital, where there were probably people in the hospital who were dead, who were passed away, you become tameh. Every time you walk onto a graveyard, you become tameh. Even the Kohanim today are tameh, which is a reason that we'll talk about, something we'll talk about in a couple of weeks, as to, well, if they're tameh, then why are they worried about being tameh again? Everybody's tameh today. And we don't worry about becoming tameh. We don't worry about eating food, which is tameh itself. The ain anu tzrichim la'osim atila, says the Tosfos, not only do you not have to make a brocha, but I'm not even sure you have to wash at all. It's a completely different kind of washing. The hamavarech, and if you do make a brocha, hariz hamavarech brocha levatola. It's for sure a brocha levatola. And by the way, do we make a brocha for karpas? No. We do not make a brocha on this basis, meaning we wash, but we don't make a brocha. Therefore, says Tosfos, this kind of washing is not the same as washing for bread. Washing for bread is a takana. Chazal made this decree, and it goes on even bizman azeh with a brocha, like we said. Washing for dipping in liquids is not the same kind of washing. It's all about tumah and tahara, and since at the end of the day we're not really worried about tumah and tahara today, you do not need to make a brocha. In fact, you must not make a brocha, and you probably do not need to wash at all. And actually, there are other Rishonim, including the Maram of Rothenburg and the Bala Ita, who say explicitly that we absolutely do not need to wash today for dipping in liquids at all. In fact, the bread washing has different reasons as well as the Tumah and Tahara angle. If you look in number 8 for a second, you'll see that the Gemara brings an entirely different reason for washing for bread, which has got nothing to do with Tumah and Tahara. Look in number 8 for a second. Vehit Kadishtem, the Pasuk there says in Vayikra, you will be holy. Vehiyitem Kadoshim, make yourselves holy and be holy. Says the Gemara in Brachas, Vehit Kadishtem, Elu Maim Rishonim. This is washing before bread. Vehiyitem Kadoshim, so you'll be holy. Elu Maim Achronim. This is washing after bread. Meaning, washing for bread is not just about, well, the Kohanim used to eat truma and we wash because we want to remind them that. It's also about that, but it's also about Kedusha. Meaning we want to elevate the meal to a level of almost like the Kohanim eating in the Beit HaMikdash. Think how many interesting minhagim we have at mealtimes which mirror the Beit HaMikdash. We wash our hands like the Kohanim wash before they go into the Avodah. We dip our bread in salt, just like the Kohanim dipped the meat in salt. There are halachas about taking the knives off the table before you bench during the week. On Shabbos, people are not particular about this, but during the week, there's actually brought in Shulchan Aruch, there should be no metal on the table, no metal knives on the table before you bench. Why? What's the problem? Because again, because the Mizbeach in the Beit HaMikdash, any metal object touching the Mizbeach would invalidate the Mizbeach, and since our table is like an altar almost, that's again a minhag that goes back to that. There are even people who throw the challah. You seen this? There's a minhagim to throw the challah. Not in a ridiculous way, but in a respect. Where does that come from? Says the Ksav Sofer, who was an Ashkenazi, not a Sephardi. People think it's the Sephardim that throw the challah. But the Ashkenazi also, Ksav Sofer says, when the Kohanim got to the top of the ramp, so the fires were quite a way away. They wouldn't walk up to them and put the meat down. They threw. You had to be a good shot if you were a Kohen. They throw the meat from the edge of the ramp over onto the fires. So too, we are mirroring this idea of being Kohenim. Our whole mealtime is a kind of mini avoda in the Mikdash. And you see here that for bread, this is an issue, but for dipping in liquids, it's got nothing to do with it. And therefore, for reasons that we've seen, the Tosfos says that there is no longer a halakhic requirement, certainly not to make a brocha, and perhaps not to dip at all. Good. Machlokes Rishonim. The Rambam, the Rosh, Rashi, Rabbeinu Yonah say you do have to wash, and maybe even make a brocha. Tosfos, the Maram of Rothenburg, and the Bala Ita say you do not have to wash, and you certainly shouldn't make a brocha. How do we paskan? A good Jewish compromise. You wash without a brocha. Have a look in number 9. The Shulchan Aruch paskens his halacha, and you may be surprised to see that he actually rules that you do have to wash. Im oichel, davar shetibula be'echad meshiva mashkim she'simanam yad shachat dam. Said if you eat food which is dipped in one of the 7 liquids, and he goes on to define here, it's not just any liquid. only one of the seven specific liquids, and he gives you a way of remembering them, Yad Shachat. It's a bit of a violent way of remembering them, Yad Shachat Dam, which are Yud Dalad Shin Chet Tet Dalad Mem, which stand for Yayin, okay, wine, which includes grape juice, Dvash, which in this case is bees honey, not date honey, Shemen, which in this case is olive oil, Chalav, which of course is milk, which would include butter and cheese, if you fancy a cheese fondue. And I don't know if people it sounds very 1980s cheese fondue, but if people still do that, that would be something which was relevant. Tal, if you eat your food dipped in dew, that's something to think about. Dam, which is blood, and there's of course a whole discussion, who eats blood? Is it fish blood or is it not fish blood, because fish blood is not trafe in the same way that other blood, or is he talking about people that are allowed to eat blood? I'm not getting into that now. And mayim, which obviously is the most relevant for us, water. If you dip any of your foods, and it's not just vegetables, it could be anything, into any of these liquids, wine, honey, oil, milk, dew, blood, or water, velonitnaget, and the food is not dried in advance, afilu ein yad avnogot b'makom hamashke, even if your hands are not going to touch the liquid, you're very careful how you eat, tzarich nitila v'lo bracha. You have to wash first, says the Shulchan Aruch, for any of these foods, but you do not make a bracha. And the Rama adds, for Ashkenazim, he agrees with this, v'afilu einu matabel rak roish hayerik, even if you only hold the top of the carrot, or whatever it is, and dip it in, or a pri, or the fruit, afilu hachi yitol v'lo bracha. You have to wash without a bracha. Now, it sounds from this Shulchan Aruch, nobody disagrees in the Shulchan Aruch. They pass in like the middle ground that you have to wash but you don't make a bracha because of sophic brachas. And therefore, why don't we do this? Do we do this? Let me ask for a show of hands. Okay? Hands which may be a little bit tummy, but hands nevertheless, okay? Who here washes for foods which are dipped in liquids? A resounding zero. For those who cannot see the video of this year, that's zero out of about 65, okay? Which is very interesting. Because according to the Shulchan Aruch, it sounds like you would have to wash for cookies dipped in milk, if that's your thing, cake dipped in coffee, if you like dipping your cake in coffee, if you wash grapes and bring them to the table still wet, and we'll define what wet means, you'd have to wash for those grapes, even though you're not dipping anything, the grapes are still wet. And remember how it works. If your hands are a shiny litumah, you touch the liquid makes the grapes tummy as well. Apple dipped in honey, cheese fondue, wet pickles. Okay? You know, they bring you, go to a restaurant in New York, they're bringing your plate of pickles. You'd have to wash for that. Vegetables dipped in olive oil or olive soaked in olive oil. So you'd have to wash for all of these things. Now, fries dipped in ketchup, you would not have to wash for. Why? Because ketchup is not one of the shivat hamashkim. I actually looked up what are the ingredients in ketchup, and the answer is tomatoes, sweeteners, vinegar, salt, spice, flavoring, onions, and garlic. None of those are included in the shivat hamashkim. Now, I did write on the top that you also would not have to wash for sushi dipped in soy sauce. Now, actually, I'm not 100% sure about this now, because I did check this morning what are the ingredients of a standard soy sauce, and it actually is based in water. It's a salt water base. Now, of course, you are not meant to be eating your sushi with your fingers. You're meant to be eating it with your chopsticks. And I won't ask for a show of hands who actually uses a fork rather than uses the chopsticks. But we'll see in a minute, it might well be that that's not a problem because you normally don't use your fingers, but let's leave soy sauce as a question. But the point here is, why do we not wash? Why does not one person in this room do this? And there may even be people who've never even heard of this. I'll go even further and tell you that the Vilna Gaon actually says not only do you need to wash, but you need to also make a bracha. He cuts straight past the Shulchan Aruch, which is very interesting. The Vilna Gaon didn't feel that he was bound by the Shulchan Aruch. He felt that he was able to go straight back into the Gemara and Paskin the way he felt. Looking number 10 for a second in the Vilna Gaon, below bracha, he brings you, well, who is he saying don't make a bracha? Tosfos, like we said, Sham. The Sfirilu, because Tosfos hold the Ha'idna Eina Torech Netzilazo, that you don't really need to make this washing, do this washing at all. Aval Kala Ga'ainim, Barova Poskim, is Kibuk, Shegam Ha'idna Noeg, Kamor Pat. says, but most of the Rishonim don't hold like Tosfos, says the Vilna Gaon. Most of the Rishonim, we saw a whole list, the Rambam, Rashi, the Rosh, Rabbeinu Yonah, hold that you do have to wash just like for bread. But Tzarich Bracha, and you have to make a bracha, says the Gaon, Tzachein Ika, and that's how I pass him. Now, I don't know whether the Gronics, the people who follow the Vilna Gaon very faithfully, whether they do indeed wash with a bracha, but the Vilna Gaon says you must wash and you must make a bracha. Now, what does the Mishnah Berurah say? So look at what he says in number 11. And we'll see why most people in this room do not wash. Velo bracha. He says, why do we wash? Why do we wash without a bracha? Ki yesh miksad harishonim, the savri shaloi yitzricho chachamim, nitzila shadayim nadavach yitzipul b'mashka. Because there are a number of the Rishonim, says the Mishnah Berurah, that hold that this washing for dipped food was only required, ele b'yameyim, in the olden days, shehayu oichlim b'tara, when people ate on a level of tara. Mashe ein kein ashav, which is not the case today, shekulanu tamimeis, and we're all tamimeis. And therefore we do not make a brocha on the washing. Shisofik brochas lahakel. Because when we have a question about whether to make a brocha or not to make a brocha, we generally do not make the brocha. Vehine. And he says, I'll tell you something else. But Magen Avram, hey, be with shame. Who is this? The Lach? Not sure who that is. He brings, the Magen Avram brings, the ha'olam noegim, that most people, even from the time of the Magen Avram, which was 400 years ago, people are knowing these days, shalot litol, not to wash at all. The yesh lahem alma sheyismachu. So that's good news. Says the Mishnah Berurah, if you do not wash at all, you have on whom to rely, which is this Magen Avraham, who says that these days people don't wash. Hainu al miktas harishonim, who are you relying on? Those few rishonim that say that washing doesn't apply today. Val, says the Mishnah Berurah, however, harbe achronim hichmiru ma'oid b'dava. There are many achronim who are very, very particular about this. Because with the ha'eka karova poskim, that really the halacha follows most of the poskim that tzarech netzila midina, that you really do have to wash af bizman hazeh, even these days. Va'ayin bebiya hagra, and he brings the gra, shegam da'at okein, the gra feels that way as well. The hichmim o'ayid bazeh, he's very particular about this. Sha'av tzarech levareich al zeh. You even need to make a brocha. Ulecheid, and therefore what's the bottom line of the Mishnah Berurah? After ha'olam ein noegim levarech, even though people do not make a brocha, and he says you shouldn't make a brocha, al kol panim ein lahakel lechol b'din etilates, but don't eat without washing. Make sure that you wash, says the Mishnah Berurah, before you dip food. But tzarich lezeh kol din etilah lekamol hapat, and you have to wash properly like you would wash for bread. Kol makam b'pachas b'kazayis, if you're eating very small amounts, less than a kazayis, he says maybe you can be lenient, and at the end he says I'm not even sure about that. So this is very interesting because according to the Mishnah Berurah, it sounds like everyone in this room really should be washing, if they're Ashkenazi at least, but not only the Ashkenazi, because actually this is the psak of the Ben Ish Chai, this is the psak of the Kaf HaChayim, who is like the Sephardi equivalent of the Mishnah Berurah in the same kind of time frame. This is the psak of Rav Avadi Yosef, this is the psak of the Chazon Ish. In fact, it's very hard to find people who clearly rule that you don't need to wash. Most people seem to say, look, this is the Shulchan Aruch, this is what's brought down, this is how the Achronim go. We should really be washing. I once asked one of my Rosh Yeshiva, and he said, really, you should be washing. And he comes to the Psak of the Kitzah Shulchan Aruch in number 12, who says the following. He says, Ha'oichel davash yitipuli b'mashka. If you eat something which is dipped in liquid, or sheba mashka ala machel, or if the liquid is still on the food, like in the case of grapes, which are wet. So adayin hu lach min hamashke, and it's still wet. Afel pisha hu einu nogeya, even though you don't touch the makam hamashke, mikol makam tzarech litol yadav tchila. Again, he says you have to wash. Rak lo yivarech, just make a brocha anetila shadayin. The harbi mikilim b'davazeh. But then he says, but many people actually are lenient about this and do not wash. Aval kol yorei shamayim yesh lo lahach me'al atmo. If you're a Yorei Shamayim, you should make sure you definitely wash. Which raises a very interesting sort of meta-halachic question, which is, who is a Yorei Shamayim? And should you be, or should I be the one to say, I'm a Yorei Shamayim? Is a chutzpah, that I should think that I'm a Yorei Shamayim? Or is this any Tom, Dick and Harry can be, well, I'd like to be a Yorei Shamayim, and I'll wash. And I really have heard different people speaking different ways about this. And again, this is almost a meta-halachic issue. I have heard people say to me, you don't want to be a Yoresh Shamayim? Not just on this halacha, but generally when it says a Yoresh Shamayim should do something. People have said to me, like, come on, who doesn't want to be a Yoresh Shamayim? And other very senior people have said the opposite, which is a chutzpah, you think you're a Yoresh Shamayim? Depends on how you look at the matter. You had a question?
It's not because people used to dip and take an olive and dip and take a pickle. Everybody had their hands in the food, so maybe they should wash.
Ah, you're off. That's a different question, which is in terms of just cleanliness. Would you? Maybe we could bring this halacha back into fashion. That especially, you know, double dipping. People are taking bites out of things and then dipping them back in again. It depends on how Israeli you want to be about it. And again, even Israelis, yesh for yesh. Not everybody is relaxed. But one thing is for sure, it's a bit of a surprise that so few people actually follow this halacha. Now, I'm not the one who is going to tell people that they should do this, for sure not. You've seen what the halachic sources are. But it is a little bit of a surprise that people don't do this more. Now, it's very interesting because the post can bring down, I didn't bring all the details here, but anything you normally eat with a knife and fork or spoon is not included in this. Therefore, cornflakes and milk in the morning, normal people eat cornflakes and milk with a spoon, or chicken in some kind of a barbecue sauce, they eat that with a knife and fork, and therefore anything you normally eat with a knife and fork or a spoon definitely does not fall into this halacha. Ah, what if you decide to eat it with your hands? You decide to pick your cornflakes and milk out with your hands, or to pick at the chicken at the end of, like, when nobody's watching in the kitchen, little bit of a chicken, you pop it in your mouth. So, again, many of the poskim say, well, batla dasa mikol adam, you're just being unusual, and therefore, if it's something you normally eat with a knife and fork, even if you do eat it with your hands, then that's not included, although the others disagree. However, the other way around will also be the equivalent. Think, for example, what if it's something that normally people eat with their fingers? Let's say apple and honey. Everyone dips apple and honey. Now, apple and honey on Rosh Hashanah we dip after we've already washed for bread, so it's not relevant. But people normally dip apple and honey with their fingers. Let's say you're very delicate and you eat it with a knife and fork. So again, the poskim say, if you're following this halacha, you would need to wash, because normally this is something which is eaten with fingers. And if you choose to eat it with a knife and fork, again, you're acting in an unusual way, and therefore you would need to wash on that basis. What's the halacha lemaisa? Look at the Orach HaShulchan here. The Orach HaShulchan is often relied upon for having the bottom line on such issues. Have a look at the Orach HaShulchan number 13. He says the following: "The be'emes, mishum tumah v'tara loy shayach etzlein." We don't really, so let's face it, we don't really have tumah and tara today in our lives. Da'ato anu nitarim mitumah. Are we really careful today from tumah? We're not careful from tumah. The ikachiv netilas shadaim. The real reason we wash for bread, who mevehit kadishtem, is really from the idea of kedusha that we talked about. V'zeh einu ela b'pas, that only applies with bread and a meal, v'achilat kavua, as we said before, with a fixed meal. U'ledeya zo ein chiyuv klal bizman hazeh, according to this view, there really is no obligation to wash at all. Litzal yadav litibuli v'mashka, to wash for things which are dipped in liquid. V'zeh einu rak bizman hakadmon, this only applies in ancient days, she'achlu b'tara, where people ate with tara. The Kain Kot of Lahedya Haturim, he brings the tour, B'Shem Amarim of Rodenberg, Umitam Zeh, Nekinim Ha'idna B'Zeh. And he basically brings down the Orach HaShulchan, what everybody in this room reflected, which is, nobody really does this anymore. Which of course raises the question, which is why we do this on Seder night. Why is everybody very particular? You know, Urchatz is one of the Simanim of Seder night, and that's not for bread. The bread one is Rachta. Urchatz is washing for Tivuli B'Mashka. So one of the questions which is raised is, well, if people don't do this anymore, why does everybody do it on Seder night? Oh, because it says so in the Haggadah, you know, okay. And we do what we're told. So some want to bring, I think the Taz there says, well, isn't this a proof on Seder night that we should be doing this the whole year round? Because if you do it on Seder night, isn't it a little bit hypocritical to say on Seder night you're a Shemayim, and you do this, but the rest of the year you go by that? And others answer no. That's the whole point. Manishtane. It's a little bit different on Seder night. And then Nitziv actually says, no, that's the whole point. All year round, we live a life which is not really connected with Tumah and Tara. But one night a year, we project ourselves back into a world which is Ke'ilu Hu Yatzam Mitzrayim. You are back there in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Ke'ilu, we should really have a hologram of a Korban Pesach in the middle of the table. That would be, you know, more evocative in this sense. You can get one on a some kind of Somet electronic switch that works on the Pesach, on the Yom Tov. We project ourselves back into a world where these things really are relevant to us. And therefore the Netziv says this is part of the beauty, part of the specialness of Seder night, that even though the rest of the year we're not particular about Tumah and Tahara, this one night a year we are, and therefore that may be a reason why we do this on Seder night but not any other nights of the week. I checked in the Pnini Halacha of Rav Eliezer Melamed, who is one of the very popular Halacha Sfarim these days, especially in the Dati Lumi community, and interestingly he brings down what everybody else brought down, which is indeed that most people do not wash. But he actually recommends that people should wash. He brings down certain lenient factors. He says, some of the poskim are more lenient with liquids which are cooked. And therefore, if the liquid is cooked, let's say your cake and your coffee, maybe that's not such a problem. He brings some poskim are more lenient if you definitely will be careful not to touch. Other poskim are more lenient when the food is very small. But he brings down in principle that that people should wash. Again, I'm not suggesting that you should now run out there and start doing the Tilas Yadam every time you have grapes, but I'm just raising that as an interesting halakhic question. One thing which I saw is Rav Avadi Yosef actually says that you should wash if you have a little bit of cake dipped in whiskey. Now, I don't know why he says that. I don't understand why he says that. If anyone can come up with a good answer on that, I wasn't able to find one. Because whiskey, for sure, is not one of the Shiva Tamashkim, okay? And therefore, why would you have to do that? But again, in principle, he says that you may have to do that. So here we have this, you know, fascinating question of dipping in liquids, which again is something that, as we saw, nobody really does. But maybe people might like to think about doing. I'm not saying that one should, but it's a very nice thing to do, and it's not that hard to do. Depending on whether you feel you ought to be Yorishamayim or not a Yorishamayim, that's a separate question, which is not for now. Let me just finish with a little bit of an introduction, maybe, to what we're going to be talking about in 2 weeks' time, which is this fascinating question of Kohanim on plates. A few years ago, it turned out, actually, that they were doing work on the runways in Ben-Gurion. And because of the work of the runways on Ben-Gurion, there is a very large cemetery, which is by the coast, near Cholod. And the planes were rerouting out of Lod into flying over the area of Kolon Cemetery. And actually this was only a problem leaving Israel, not going into Israel. And there was a lot of discussion at the time, both this in 2016 when this happened, and also a few years earlier. Excuse me, there was a viral picture that was going round of a Hasidic looking gentleman wrapped in a plastic bag with a knot on the top, that was in the papers around April 2013. What happened there is Obama came to visit Israel, and therefore they closed the airspace around Israel, and the only way people could get back to Israel was by flying from Cyprus, and this Cohen had a choice, either getting stuck in Cyprus for Pesach or flying over a cemetery. Excuse me, the psag that he was given was indeed when the plane was about to land in Israel, and it flew, you know, that little bit where you fly over the coast and you look down and you say, oh, Baruch Hashem, we're getting into Israel. He immediately zipped himself up in a plastic bag and knotted the top, much to the concern of many people around him, and wore this plastic bag for a few minutes. What we'd like to do next time is really look at, like, what's going on here? Apart from the concern that this would cause to the other passengers, is this really required? What does it achieve? What are the halachas of a Kohen and flying over? Can we say that the aeroplane is an ohel? Elal even created a little plastic system that goes around the bodies on planes. Let's leave this in 2 weeks, please God. We'll pick it up and take it from there. Excuse me. I will not be here next week, but I hope to be here in 2 weeks and have a voice with me as well. Okay, have a great week. Thank you.